are you guys doing today? Good. Thanks for coming to the Cloquet Vineyard on a beautiful day. I realized something about myself, and I don't know why I'm sharing this, but why not? I am like a weather optimist. No matter when it is, I was going to get up and say, I love summer, it's the best. But I remember saying that in the winter, and it's like, oh man, winter's the best. I just love weather. I just realized I'm a big fan of weather and a big fan of you. That's called transition. All right, so we are continuing our series on going through the whole entire book of Galatians. And where we're at now is right at the beginning of chapter 4. And what Paul's inviting us into is how can we, Paul who wrote the book of Galatians or the letter to the Galatians church, how can you just be like a really healthy, dynamic, robust like person? We believe that God is a big fan of like the entire you, like emotionally, physically, intellectually, mentally, like all of it. Spiritually, he wants us to be healthy, a Jesus-looking person in every area of our lives. And he invites us how to be healthy. And here he begins to talk like a friend. He has like different, when he's writing his letter, he jumps all over the place from talking to this group and to this group, and then here in verse 8 to 20, it's almost like he just like, if he wore a hat, I don't know if he wore a hat or not, like take it off, put it on a table, sit back, and just talks like a friend. He just connects as a friend. And like, man, we love friends, right? Everyone loves friends. We like, and that's, like Nikki said, it, like that's part of our vision. And we want to have like healthy relationships, life-giving relationships here at the Cloquet Vineyard. But sometimes being a friend can be hard, right? Friendship, real friends, aren't just always just like leprechauns and rainbows, right? It's a lot more than that. In college, I had a really, really good friend, and we were talking, and there was like this span of like 2 months. Every time we talk, this friend would say, like, every other word was like or you know. You know how you have those relationships where you notice something, and you're like, I gotta say something, right? But you don't want, like if you're married here, like don't say it, all right? But for friends, different game for some reason. And I knew this was not good, right? That this person could like grow through this. And I had to make the decision to have a hard conversation. And so we're talking and they said, like, you know, and I said, I don't know, but I do know this, like, you're using these words over and over and over, and I don't think you're doing it on purpose. I think it's like a tick. And yeah, exactly, right? God, don't you just dream of being able to have your friends tell you have a tick? You have a tick, Chris. So, and it was hard, but it was good. We stayed friends, and it was like, but I was nervous, right? Like, if you really love someone, it shouldn't be so bad to be able to, like, in love, be able to bring something up. In reality, that's not a very hard conversation, but it feels hard, right? Regardless of what you're talking about, if you are not at the place of your friendship where you can have really, really deep conversations, sometimes it's hard to have real conversations. And I imagine that maybe you've been the recipient of a hard conversation, or you had to have a hard conversation of like, hey, you know, you had this goal of being healthy, and like everything you're doing is really not that healthy. That's a hard conversation. It might be like as a parent telling your adult kid, like, hey, you're living in my basement and you need to get out. I'm living in my parents' basement right now. So yes, Dad, we'll have that conversation later, right? So in all seriousness, there is times in life where we have to have hard conversations. And I think it's fairly easy just to convince ourselves not to, right? It's like, man, I really should talk about how they're treating like their kids. Man, the way they're spending money. I see that, like, this way that their friendship is going. I feel like you're just isolating me. But what do? We're Minnesota nice. So we just smile and judge silently instead of, you know, verbally, right? But that's not a sign. Just tolerating people is not a sign of the kingdom of God. Like, being, like, a genuine person, like, who loves people, we're willing to have a voice. Like, speaking up is a beautiful thing. And today what we're going to be looking at is Paul does this. Paul, like, begins to, out of place of love, have a hard conversation. And actually, it gives us a beautiful framework of how we can be just an outstanding friend. A great, great person. Because we believe that like there's never a downside to loving, and to sincerely love is a lot more than just high fives. It's a lot more than just some barbecues. But loving is actually having a voice. So if you have a Bible, or you can open up your smartphone, we have Bibles actually in the back if you want to follow along. And we're going to be reading out of Galatians chapter 4, verses 8 through 20. And this is a lot. That's a lot of verses, so bear with me as I read whatever 20 minus 8 is. All right, so starting in verse 8. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were slaves to those who by nature are not gods. But now that you know God, or rather are known by God, how is it that you are turning back to those weak and miserable forces? He's just very to the point. So, do you wish to be enslaved by them all over again? You are observing special days and months and seasons and years, and I fear for you that you somehow, I have wasted my efforts on you. That's a warm fuzzy right there, right? I think I've wasted all my time on you. But I plead with you, brothers and sisters, become like me, for I became like you. You did me no wrong, as you know it was because of an illness that I first preached the gospel to you, and even though my illness was a trial to you, you did not treat me with contempt or scorn. Instead, you welcomed me as if I were an angel of God, as if I were Christ Jesus himself. Where then is your blessing of me now? I can testify that if you could have done so, you would have torn out the eyes and given them to me. Have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? Those people are zealous to win you over, but for no good. What they want is to alienate you from us that you may have zeal for them. It is fine to be zealous, provided the purpose is good, and to be so always, not just when I'm with you. My dear children, for whom I am again in the pains of childbirth until Christ is formed in you, how I wish I could be with you now and change my tone, because I am perplexed about you. So Paul, like, that's a lot, right? That's a lot happening there. And what Paul is doing, he starts off in verse 8 talking about the problem. Talks about the problem. He says, you knew this, like you met the beautiful life that happens when you like hear the gospel, when you hear Jesus, and you meet Jesus, you experience Jesus, and you experience this good and beautiful life. The thing that you always wanted, you got. But then he says, but so why are you going back? Why are you going back to all these old ways, all the things that were never created to bring you like life to the fullest? Like all these things that you thought would like quench that thirst, they just didn't. And then you experienced like the gospel, you experienced it, and like you got what you're looking for. That thirst, it's gone. Why are you going back? Paul like is a little perplexed by this, and he even says, like, I think I might even waste my time on you. This is now strictly as you were talking as a friend, if you were just like really, really frustrated. You see, like us observing this, we might think, yeah, why would you want to go back to something that was not life-giving? It's easy to like look at other people and say, why in the world, if you're trying to like be healthier, why are you going back to eating like 5 bags of Cheetos? All right, you don't want that. Does not help you get to be over here, right? If you're having like this emotional affair, going back on Facebook and connecting with these people, like it doesn't help to get back on Facebook. So we can easily look around and say, yeah, why would you do that? It's a lot harder when, like, someone's asking you, right? Because it is real easy to go back to the things that bring us life. Real easy. And one of the things that we call at the Vineyard, we call it an empty well. An empty well, like a well where you go to get water and you think, oh, this thing I'm going to invest my time, my energy, my heart, my resources, whatever it is, I'm going to put my effort into this to get some water, to get something to bring me life. But there's never enough water. No matter how far you go, it's like I got to go a little bit further, and finally it's going to make me feel okay. It's going to make me feel beautiful. It's going to make me feel good. It's going to make me feel valued, right? And we do this in like a ton of things, right? We do this with food. We do this with money. We do this with our career. We do this with our kids performing to the way that we need them to. We do this with like a lot of like life-controlling habits. But like even though you know it's like not life-giving, why do we still go back? Right? Because we go around and say, no, not me. No, I'm great. I'm killing it, right? No, whatever it might be, you go back to it, and you go back to it when? When you get a little rustled up. When you get disappointed. When you feel ignored. When you feel maybe weak. You get angry. I was just talking to one of my friends and talked about like you don't realize you're an emotional eater until you just like remove yourself from eating any of those things. And like you have a hard day at work, you're like, oh man, all I need is like a Kit Kat bar? Are they still in existence? All right, so like, I just need that Kit Kat bar. Give me a break of that Kit Kat bar. It just popped in my head. So I'm really proud of myself that I remember that. Right? But you don't realize that you have emotional reactions to things that you go to get life. That's really what it is. You go to get life. And this is Paul addressing the problem, saying, guys, why are you going back to all these rituals, all these things that never really led to anything like really, really as good as you have it now? Don't go back. Then, right? Then he goes into, starting verse 12, he goes into like the hard conversation. And let me just say this. What Paul is doing is Paul is being a lover. Hey, lover, all right? He's being a lover because friends love. And when you really, really love, you have to be vulnerable. If you cannot be vulnerable, you cannot love. It's impossible. You could be nice. You could be really nice. Like, hey, Mike, really love the haircut. It's great. All right? I could just go around, Tess, really like that shirt. Awesome, sweet shirt. All right? I could, like Berry Farms. Big fan of Berry Farms. Right? I could, like, go around and do that. Doesn't mean that I'm loving. I'm just nice. To really love means I have to be willing to empty of myself into that other person, whoever it might be. But like, when you give your heart to someone, that's what you're doing. You give your heart to someone, then you are not in complete control of your heart. Like, classic example is like, if you have kids, your heart does not belong to you, right? Like, when your kids are not well, you are not well. When your kids are sick, you feel sick. When your kids are happy, you're like, woo, we're happy too. A couple summers ago, we were out on lake walk in Canal Park, and we were biking, and Max just learned how to, my youngest son learned how to ride his bike, and he wanted to go ahead. We said, yeah, just go up ahead, and we'll meet by like that little water station. And we had our youngest daughter with us, and so she was taking a little bit longer, and we thought, it's fine. Like the eternal optimist, right? This is where it doesn't help. I'm like, it's going to be totally okay. What's the worst that can happen? Here's the rest of the story. So we get up to where Max is supposed to be, and he's not there. And so still eternal optimist, Nikki's like, is he okay? I'm like, he's fine. He's probably around that corner. Go around the corner. He's probably around the other corner. He's probably behind that bush. He's probably in the trash can, right? Like, I'm just trying to stay positive. And after like a minute where we couldn't find our son, I was not okay. And if you ever like lost a kid, or you couldn't find them, like you begin to panic. I was surprised at how quickly I went to the dark place. Like, I'm running around up like behind Canal Park, where the benches are and the park is up there, and I'm running around and I'm like bawling. I am bawling, and in my head, I'm thinking about like Christmas without Max. I'm thinking about like Thanksgiving without all my kids around that table. I was like losing it. I'm being like, Max, where are you? Right? It was like a Hallmark movie. It was like, it totally was. Like, not without my child. That was me. So I'm running, and finally little old Max just comes biking down. You know, he had like those non-pedal bikes. He's just kicking his legs. He's like, hi, Papa. I'm like, son. The cops were there. It was a total of like, we lost him for like 15 minutes. And 15 minutes felt like eternity, right? Like, when you love, when you really, really love, you're vulnerable. Because when you're vulnerable, then you get to like actually be invest in other people. And this is what Paul's doing. He's willing to have a voice. He's willing to not just say, all right, Galatian churches, all right, can we all just get along? All right, let's just all be okay. Let's all hang out. He's saying, he uses the word, it's like childbirthing pains. Now, this is classic guy using something that he has never experienced, will ever experience, and equating it as bad. Like, I know how bad that is. Trust me, I'm a man, all right? Classic. We've never changed. We've never changed. Because he decides, he chooses to love, and so in a way, he's choosing to suffer. Because to really, really love someone means it's going to hurt. And just because your relationship might be hard, not just because you have conflict in your relationship, doesn't mean that it's bad. It means there's an opportunity to grow. It's absolutely opportunity. But why do we say, well, I'm not going to be vulnerable? Why am I not going to open myself up? Well, we do it because we can self-protect. Then we get to be in control who gets our best. We get to be in control who gets my heart. And that works for a while. But man, from my experience, like some of my deepest friendships are people that I'm willing to say, okay, I'm going to be right in the mess of it with you. And I don't know what I'm doing. Like, that's my marriage. I don't know always what I'm doing, but I'm going to give love. I'm always going to give love. But here's what C.S. Lewis, this quote, I imagine maybe you've heard it before. I've seen it a bunch. And C.S. Lewis says this: to love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in a casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe and dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. So when you love, you're choosing to have the great times, and you're also willing to stay at the table. You're willing to lean in. You're willing to have a voice. So here's my question. Do you have someone that you ache for? Do you have like a friend that is just going through the ringer? And you know their dream, you know their goal, you know like their heart, and you want it, like you just want it so bad that you're willing to go to bat for them, you're willing to fight for them, you're willing to encourage them, you're willing to like crush Jack's pizzas like at 2 a.m. with them, like you just, because you want them to experience the best. Could be a friend, could be a family member, could be a neighbor, could be a coworker. Like, if you have someone like that, I applaud you. Like what Paul says at the end, he says, I am crazy for you. I'm like fighting for you for Christ to be like formed in you, to have the good and beautiful life. If you have someone like that, this next point, the next 2 points, hopefully, like I found them really encouraging. To give us like practical ways of how we could have a voice, not just to feel the pain of it, but how we can invite people in to continue to move forward. Second one is this: if you don't have someone like that, I'd encourage you, like get to know the people around you. Here's like I just had coffee with a friend recently, like I was talking to him how he just knows the Bible. He just knows the Bible. He just consumes the Bible, and he has no problem telling me otherwise. Right? He has no problem saying, that's not true. I totally disagree with that, right? We need more people like that. Like if you're at a place, maybe for whatever reason, where you just feel like you are holding your heart close to your chest, I'd encourage you to like notice someone. Invest yourself in the people around you. You have a beautiful story. You have incredible value and worth and resources. I would encourage you to give away your best. Begin to get real. Begin to be vulnerable. It's not just walking up to a stranger and saying, let me tell you all my deep, darkest secrets. Chris told me to cry a lot. All right, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, what would it look like if you just took one step and you learned your neighbor's name? It might be there. Instead of just saying, I can never remember their name. What if you just said, okay, I'm going to walk over again, shake their hand, look in the eye and say, I'm sorry, what's your name again? Start there. There's incredible power when we can notice people. All right, that's my whole second point. So but I'll go on, right? So verse 12, he says, become like me, for I became like you. Paul starts this conversation, he starts by saying, become like me, right? We're going to talk about a little bit. Why you should become like me? Because I became like you. Paul would move into these towns, and he was a church planner. He wanted to come and create like a positive spiritual community, but in the context, in the culture that was already there, instead of walking and saying, all right, all you jerks, you got to be like me, he started by saying, I'm going to hear your stories. I'm going to like see what makes you like, your heart go pitter-pat, pitter-pat. I'm going to invest in relationship. I'm going to learn like your dog's name. I'm going to like know where you work. I'm going to know what you're dreaming of. I want to know like what your threats are and what your opportunities are. He was willing to like be with people. And when I imagine that, like, let's just lump all of Christianity, right, into like one church. Imagine a lot of people think when they hear like, oh yeah, Christian, right? You're a spiritual person. They probably think a lot of like we're just going to tell you what to do. Like us as the church, walking on saying, oh, you should try it harder, right? Oh no, if only you didn't swear. You got to stay away from the boozing and the drinking and the smoking, right? All that. that it's almost just like you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, we're right, we're right, we're right. Like, actually, that's not at all what we see in the person of Jesus. It's not what we see in the life of Paul. Like, he was willing to share life with people. Why? Because that's what you do. You love. And you don't love for a bait and switch. You don't love just to get something in return. Like, I'm going to be really nice to you, but only if you come to church, right? It's funny, isn't it? But I think if we're honest, that's sometimes what it feels like. Like, what Jesus invites us into is like, will you just like love people? Why? Because I'm crazy about them. I'm absolutely in love with people. And will you love your neighbor as you love yourself? That's not with some directive and then trick them into coming in your small group. No, just loving people for that value. That's what Paul did. Paul's willing to share life with people because it's a beautiful thing. And really, this is really what Jesus did. Jesus did not come as a supernatural like ghost that just pretended to be a man walking around like, ooh, I'm Jesus. That's not what he did, right? He came as a baby. He came as a little baby. God became flesh. Like, flesh and blood moved into the neighborhood where he walked with us. He heard our stories. He knew that culture in that specific time, learned their rhythms, learned what they celebrated, what they loved, heard all their stories, all their history, knew the Torah, knew the scripture so, so well. And had friends. They could high five, they could run, they could race. I imagine Jesus lost a couple times. I know, it's wrong, right? So, he got to know us way before he said, now be like me. When you can notice people, and when I say notice, simply just looking people in the eye. I've made this intentional decision. Like, when I'm walking through Super One, I'm trying to look, because you're probably going to see me and I'm looking down my phone like, you are a liar. So I make it a point to look at people when I'm walking down the aisle and say, hey, how's it going? Hey, how are you doing today? Good morning. If I interrupt anyone, I'll always look at them and say, excuse me. Because what I've learned is that it's shocking to people. Like, the one lady, she was walking by me and said, hi, how are you today? And she looked at me like, what are you going to do, stab me? Like, she's just like, self-protect, scramble, dodge, dip, dive. So people just aren't used to being noticed. But you know, not every time, a majority of times I do it, people like smiling, hey, hi, how are you doing? There's something beautiful by just looking at someone and saying what's on their name tag, or just saying, how are you doing? And why is it good? Because I think that's genuine love. That's not just being a nice person. That's, I'm trying to notice them. I'm trying to at least activate some sort of like good and beautiful thing in like aisle by like the Spanish rice section, right? There's something beautiful about that. My invitation to you is just to begin to notice people. Like, where's your opportunity to notice someone? Like, maybe it's like your best friend that you had since you're like in kindergarten, right? I love hearing those stories. Like, hey, how long have you guys been friends? They're like, oh, about 70 years. I'm like, all right. But maybe you've just like gotten to your rhythm. You always just do the same thing. You have the same compliments. You have the same arguments. And you just, there's like this distance between you. What would it look like to notice your friend, to notice your spouse, to notice your neighbor, to notice the teenager you see walking through this hallway on the weekend, to like notice your boss? What would it look like to feel like they feel? Like, what do they love? What's their rhythm? So here's a practical tip of how we can grow in this. This is like a brilliant idea. Yeah, slap my own back right here. Two things: talk less, listen more. Guarantee it. You start doing that, if you just ask life-giving questions. Here's like my, I learned this from my wife, who's a leadership coach. And she coaches me all the time, right? So we'd be talking. She goes, Chris, how was your day today? I was like, oh, it was good. What was good about it? right? And I'd say something like, oh, yeah, like I played Mario Brothers. I never play Mario Brothers. I don't know why I said that, right? I played Mario Brothers. And then the life-giving question is, what else? What else? Something simple as that makes it feel like all the attention's on me. and says, "Hey, how was your day? I want you to be done so you do the dishes." That's not what she's saying. That's a powerful way to notice people. Talk less, ask life-giving questions, and then create a lot of space to listen to people. And Paul, when he comes in, he's not saying, "It's time to change. You're wrong. I'm right." He starts by saying, "I want to know what you love." Oh, man. And Paul does, this is not the only part where he does this. In 1 Corinthians 9:22, he says, "I have become all things to all people so that all possible means I might save some." And people hear this and they take this as Paul saying, "I can be all things to all people." Like he's like some sort of like really shallow hypocrite, right? Like, "Today I'm going to be super happy for you." And then over here I'm going to be like totally dark and inward, man, right? Like he's not just doing that to be a trick. His whole point is like, you can do whatever you want. Doesn't matter. There's no consequences. Like, read the book of Romans. It talks about there's absolutely consequences for what we decide to do, how we treat people, how we treat ourselves. What he's saying is, I'm willing to have the conversation. I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to engage you. I'm willing to, even if I disagree with you, I'm willing to be at the same table. I feel like as like a community, not just, we can go to the country and politics and happy for you, right? But like even just like here in Carlton County, I think there's opportunity for us just to really just listen and give value to people, not just automatically saying, "You're right, I'm wrong. Oh, you're on this end, I'm on this end." Like a really healthy community can be at the table together, and that there's value and there's beauty. Paul says, "Become like me because I was willing to become like you." But he still says, "Become like me." Right? And this is a very cocky way of talking, isn't it? Do you ever like walk in a room like, "All right, everybody, be like me because I'm number one," right? Like you don't do that. That takes a very high level of confidence. So what is he getting at? He's really walking through this tension. And as humans, we love to be on both ends of this, right? We either want to be like the "be like me," which is I am clearly right. Wherever I'm going, I am right. I know the truth. It's us versus them. And the us, we're the right ones. And the them, oh, if only you could be like us, then you'd be good. We love to live on those extremes. The other one, which would be I became like you, the extreme side of that is like, well, it just doesn't really matter. We're just going to like just live life, and like your truth can be your truth, my truth can be my truth, and we'll just like just kind of go through life, and we're not going to like have a voice against each other. It's just going to like, we're just going to like live here together, and we're going to do life like that. And I think on either ends of those extremes, right, I don't think that is like where you can experience a good and beautiful life. I believe it's where you can have the tension that Paul can like embrace both of these. Why? Because that's the gospel. That's the gospel. The gospel is that there is radical tension. The kingdom of God, there is absolute tension, and we don't need to run away from tension. We don't. Jesus says in this world, in John, he says in this world there will be trouble. Don't be surprised by it. Don't be surprised that you're going to like have some complicated times. Don't be surprised that you're going to have bad days. Don't be surprised when your neighbor like just does not like you because the way you cut your grass, right? He says, don't be surprised. Tension we can live in. And what he's saying is that we're not just going to sit here and just like have not ever speak up. And when he says, be like me, he's not saying I'm the only right one. He's willing to be right in the middle and saying we can love each other out of humility and vulnerability, but we can still encourage, fight, and champion one another. That is a beautiful thing. To be able to speak up, to be able to speak up and say, I know that there's something more inside of you. And I just talked to someone about this, and they're like, I feel like I need to say something. I think I need to bring up something I think might be a little bit kind of hard. But I don't want to judge them. I don't want to be judgy. And like, let me say that is a great goal, right? Like, put that on your bathroom mirror. Do not judge today. But when you are able to speak into someone's life, doesn't mean that you're judging them. When you have enough relationship with someone, when you have taken the time to like get to know them, I became like you, then speaking something in truth Speaking a hard truth in love, that's the key. In love doesn't mean you're judging them. Imagine it's like this. It's like a relational bank account. And every time that you're willing to say, like, hey, Chelsea, how was your day? I remembered her name, right? I'm depositing something into that account. How was your day? You help your friend move. You, like, respond to a text message within, like, a week, right? You remember their birthday. You do something nice for them. That's like investing. You're, like, depositing into that account. But then there's times where you need to make a withdrawal. Hey, actually, you know, when you kind of made that racist joke, that's not okay. That's a deposit, or that's a withdrawal. Hey, you know, the way that you're treating your wife like that, you're a better man than that. That's a withdrawal. What happens when we live on the extreme of just be like me, be like me, what you're doing is you're making withdrawals and it's bankrupt. Maybe you've experienced this before. Maybe in your work environment, maybe in your family environment, there was never a deposit of something life-giving. There was no like value put in your relationship. It was just go, 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 be right, or I'm right, I'm right. I will not lose. I always win. Perform, try harder. And like that's really warm fuzzies. Now that's making you feel all good inside, like, oh, thanks, boss. I have no value. Yes, I'll get those reports to you. Right? But what the way that we can have those hard conversations is by first making those deposits. By doing life-giving things, by putting value and worth, investing it into the person. But you have to make withdrawals. You see, the difference between being judgy, right? Judging people, and Jesus talks about this, right? He says, hey, you know, worry about the little speck of sawdust in your own eye before you look, or the dust in someone else's eye for the log in your own. That's it. I know the Bible. I went to school. So, you hear that, and that is great. That it's so important because we usually go to the judging. Like maybe you heard on the news about some things that some parents did. Some horrible things happened to their kids. And you hear that, and you're like, ugh, they're horrible parents. Who do they think they are? And maybe you didn't voice it. Maybe you didn't put it on Facebook. Maybe you thought it. And like, they are the worst parents in the history of history, right? And then you do that, why? Because I'm a great parent. I'm the best parent compared to them. Right? Now, that's judging. That's absolutely judging. Why? Because you have no idea their story. You have no idea of like their family routine. You have no idea of their family history. You have no idea of what happened in those moments. We just hear little headlines and we instantly saying, put judgment on them. You are bad and I am good. That's what Jesus is talking about. Like even today, there was like someone who was driving and I didn't know them. They just did something stupid in the parking lot, like, came right behind me, and I instantly, like, what a horrible, horrible person, is what I thought. Right? Am I the only one? Am I on the island alone? Am I the only one who does that? But that's what I thought. Why? Because I judged them by this brief little interaction that was not, you know, safe, but I instantly said, you're bad, I'm good. That is not okay. That is not a Jesus-looking person, not at all. But when you have made deposits, when you have like gotten to know someone, and you know their story, you know their goals, you know their dreams, they've shared it with you, and then you see them begin to like slowly burn, and you think, oh, I don't want to judge them. I'm not going to say anything. That is not love. That is absolutely not love. Why? Because friends speak up for one another. Why? Because family is willing to fight for and with that person. That you're willing to engage, you're willing to work hard, you're willing to cry with them, laugh with them, grieve with them, mourn with them, and celebrate with them. Instead of just standing back and saying, oh, it's none of my business. That's not loving. And it's easy. It's easy for the Minnesota Knights to win of saying, we better not stop over. We better not stop over. No, we better not call. We'll wait till they call us. How many moments have you had in your own life where you just craved for someone just to show up at your house when they know that you're in the dark place. Someone just to come around, give you a hug, and say, I believe in you. Someone to say, hey, I saw you making these decisions. Like, you're better. You're better than that. You said you have this dream. You have this goal of like losing 50 pounds. You have this goal of being like a better mom. You have this goal of like being a great, great neighbor in your community. You have this goal of education. You have this goal of whatever might be kicking this life-controlling addiction. And when other people notice it, saying, well, that's too bad for them. They should make better decisions. Speak up. Speak up. Love has a voice. It's not, I know maybe some of you are thinking like, yeah, I wish they would speak up. You hate your spouse, I wish you'd speak up. It's you. You have a voice. You have a beautiful voice. And it's easy when you get into a room, like let's use our community, our church here, right? Remember the church? Who's the church? We're the church, not the building. We are the church. And it's easy to look around and say, oh man, they have a voice. Like, that person has a voice. Why? Because it seems like they can do some great things. They have a voice. Why? Because like maybe they're on staff. Or they have a better voice. Why? Because like they go to a small group. Whatever you can, like they wear nice clothes. Whatever it might be. We always put on someone else. Like Jesus is inviting you to have a voice. To be an unbelievably great friend. A great dad, a great neighbor. But where it starts, you can't miss this. Because if you didn't, if Paul never just said, be like me, try harder, that's not the gospel. He says, be like me. Say yes to Jesus like I did. Be humble. Be willing to love. Be willing to notice. Be willing to lay down your life for the other. That's what Paul did. He's saying, be like me. That's what he's inviting us into. Will you love? But if we don't notice the other, and the other could be the person right across the street from you, it could be someone in the refugee camp, it might be your enemy, it might be a Packer fan, it might be, you know, someone from Esco, it might be, you don't know, Holyoke even, maybe even Holyoke, right? They count, they matter. So you have to be willing to notice and then have hard, life-giving conversations. Here's my dream for our church. This is where I end. My dream for this church is that we can be a Jesus-looking community. That we can laugh, that we can have parties, we can go to grad parties, we can run down the streets on Sawdust 5K and get sunburned and eat hot dogs. We can have like life-giving conversations, but we are willing to love and speak up, to challenge one another, to invest in one another, to celebrate one another. Why? Because that's what friends do. So I'd love to have you stand. We're going to pray. So one of the things that we like really believe is that God is actually good. And when I say good, it isn't just like he pretends to be good and then he just gets super angry and yells at us, right? We believe that God is a good and beautiful God and wants good and beautiful things for us. And one of the ways that, as followers of Jesus, that we connect with God, a way that we can experience him is through praying. And so that's why we end our message here by just praying and asking God, hey, will you continue to give us some good things? And there's a couple things that I'm going to invite to you to respond a little bit, where we have our ministry team. They're up here. These are people who are for you and for your story and want to notice you and ask God through like simple prayers just to do that in your life, whatever it is that you're walking through. But I feel like one of the things that could be happening, either someone who's listening on this podcast or in this room, is you just feel very alone. The whole idea of being noticed, it feels unfair. That's what I'm feeling. It feels unfair. Why should I notice the other when I am never noticed? And you might be here, it might not be just because you've isolated yourself or whatever reason. You might be like in a room full of people, and wherever you go, you just feel absolutely alone. And what I feel like God might be saying is that he notices you. And you might be here and you need that. As I pray, I'm going to ask God just like give us good things for all of us, right? But if you're here and you feel just the aloneness, just receive that. For me, the way I receive that is I just say, God, I want that. I want to experience your love. I want to be noticed by you. I want to experience that good and beautiful life. So if that's for you, then I'm going to pray, and I'm just pray over all of us. Please join me. So, God, we welcome you. Holy Spirit, will you come? And I just thank you, God, that you came to us, that you noticed us, and you looked at like what you created. You said it was good. It's a good thing. And you came through your son, Jesus, showed us how to live a good and beautiful life. And through his death and resurrection, like, we get to experience that goodness, not just later, not just like on a cloud in heaven. Like, we experience that now. I pray for my friends who feel alone, who feel hurt, who feel isolated, who feel fear. And I ask, Jesus, that you would speak beauty to them right now. God, you would breathe hope into their life. Where there feels like there's nothing but like yesterday, those dark storm clouds that rolled through, I ask, Jesus, that you would bring light. Because when light comes, it exposes the lies. And the lies saying that you have no value because what was done to you, that you have no worth because of that one thing you decided to do, that you don't count, that you don't matter because you didn't try hard enough. I ask, God, that your light would come and expose those lies and reveal your truth, that you're crazy about us. You want nothing but good things for us. Thank you that you became like us, and to help us, Jesus, now to become, just even today, just like one more step of just to be a Jesus-looking person. We love you. Amen. So I'm going to invite our ministry team to make their way to the front. And we're going to take just a little bit of time. You do not need to come up here. It's not like you have to like rank and file in. Like, I guess I got to go up. But if you're interested in talking with someone and having them pray for you, they're all trained on how to just connect with God, hear your story, and not do anything weird. That's like a big one. They're not going to do anything weird. They're just going to ask you a simple question and have a short prayer. And there's two things I feel like if you want prayer for. The first one is this. You want to move closer to a person, but you don't know how. You want to notice them. You want to love them. And I wrote down, like, your kid, your neighbor, or your spouse. And you feel like, I don't know how to love them anymore. Like, man, God would love to, like, show you. God would love to give you something good. Second one is this. You are judgy as I'm talking about that. And you're like me when that saw that drive. You're like, you are a horrible person. This you feel this a lot. And you want to be done with that. You realize it's not fun. You realize it's not good. It's not helping anyone. You just don't know how to stop. You don't know how to change the direction. We'd love to pray for you about that. If there's anything else in your life you'd like prayer for, come on up. We're going to worship for a little bit more. Thank you for coming to the Vineyard, and I'll see you at the Newcomers Lunch.